The following is a sponsored program. High Desert Broadcasting is not responsible for the views or claims expressed in this program.
In front of him.
Good morning, Dr. Vicky.
Good morning.
Welcome to It's a Paradox.
Which means I have it. Wait, right in front of me.
You need to get a little closer to the mic there, sweetheart.
An opinion or statement contrary to commonly accepted belief.
And
I should know
that
by now.
That's not the number one definition, but it's a definition that suits us better. It was like number five down the list.
I know, but it's perfect for us.
I know. So today we are talking about raising healthy teens. It's part two in our Raising Healthy Kids series. And we have in the studio with us, what's your official title? Is it Sergeant Mark Kripe with the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department. Welcome.
Glad to be here.
I'm sorry. I talked all over that. Would you like to say again your title? Because I was making fun of Sergeant Master. Saying Sergeant Submissive.
Sergeant Mark Kripe.
And did you just say Sergeant Submissive?
Yes.
Mark is anything.
No, he's already blushing. He's not. He's sitting there going, I'm not talking now.
Oh, he can handle it.
He's smiling, though, so I guess it's okay. So tell us, well, let's just go ahead and start with the VITA program, because I know that that's your baby.
Yeah, VITA is a intervention program for juvenile delinquency. It's been running for a little over a decade. It started in East L.A. Two deputy sheriffs started it down south. Sheriff Baca made it go countywide in 2000. We had 14 sites, and then that was curtailed in 2003. We worked hard to bring it back. It came back online in about 2005. We have 8 sites currently. The program is designed to do a few things. One is to assess the factors, risk factors in a child's life that are causing negative behavior.
And how young do you assess them?
We start at 11. 11 is the youngest we'll go. our average age range countywide is around 13 to 15. 13-year-old to 15-year-olds is our most prevalent population.
So if you're able to intervene at that younger age, are you seeing huge responses of the changing kids?
Absolutely. And it's not so much about changing kids as changing the paradigms within a family unit.
Yeah, I agree.
The parenting component is absolutely necessary. We have,
you think?
We have parenting classes that parents are mandated to attend. And so that's a huge thing. Kids, for the most part, want to do well. Every 16 weeks, we intake and work with about 300 families. Very few of those kids want to be bad. People don't wake up or go to sleep dreaming about being in jail or hooking on the street or strung out on dope.
Right.
That's not something that we as humans dream about. We don't dream about being a failure or failing in our lives.
Right.
So once you understand that everybody wants to do well, they want to be accepted, they want to matter in their life, then you just start working from there. Okay, well, how do we get there?
Right. Okay, makes sense to me.
So from before they get to 11, I mean, the messages that they must be hearing at home then are not that stellar for someone at 11 years old to need your kind of intervention.
Well, you need to sit and think about where all these kids are getting their input from. Television, video games, online gaming.
I can't believe
gaming.
How much TV parents let their kids watch.
Well, online gaming now is just it's the
just
new
as
thing.
Bad.
You know, I'm going to interject with the story because kind of prepping for this teen show, I turned on Nick this week.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
Nick or Nick Jr.?
It's predominantly shows for teens.
Okay.
And I happened to catch like 2 minutes of this scene where a young girl, I'm guessing like 17, and her boyfriend have decided to have sex. And he says, are you sure you're ready for this? And she says, oh, yeah, we've been seeing each other for 3 months, and the pill is really clearing up my complexion.
Oh, my God.
And I thought, oh, that's what I thought. Oh, my God. What a message. Yeah, it's okay to have sex because I have clear skin.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, what's accepted? I mean, each generation changes dramatically. You know, if we have a tendency to raise our children the way we were raised into, is given the factors that were in our life at that time as we were coming up. Those changed dramatically. We didn't have a computer system that you can log on to and have video chats with anybody in the world, or play online gaming with anybody in the world, or a very broad spectrum of, you know, people that come together in one area verbally with different beliefs, different moralities.
In that sense, the world has really shrunk since we were kids. I mean, my sphere of universe when I was growing up was, you know, within a 2 or 3 mile radius of my house in Miami. You know, whatever I could easily get to on my bike and be close enough that I could get home if my mom and dad called over to my friend's house and said, you need to get here. But now kids can sit in their living room and have conversations with people from, you know, Afghanistan or Pakistan or Italy or Switzerland. It's crazy how the world has shrunk.
My son's 16, and he considers one of his best friends a boy out of New Zealand who he's never met personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's kind of an ironic situation, in my opinion. The whole social networking off the computer. You know, my friends were very tangible. We'd do things together. We would,
right?
You know,
yeah, go over to each other's houses or have sleepovers.
As early as 15 years ago, a friend that I worked with had been arrested for being an imposter on the internet. She was actually stalking Michael J. Fox at the time, and was and was presenting herself as an 11-year-old boy. Now, so you think of your son having a friend in New Zealand that he's really never met.
Yeah, how do you confirm it's another teenage boy?
Well,
there's Skype now, so you can actually see their lips moving and stuff. But
yeah, there's some things you know, where you can actually see them real time, like you said, Skype and whatnot. You know, the internet's done a lot. There's a lot of people on the internet trying to develop software and different ways to communicate that begin to authenticate who you are. I think it's called, I'm going to probably get this wrong, I'm going to say E-Verify, but there's a website out there that you can go on, log on. They check your what we would call vitals in law enforcement, but they check who you are, and then they'll say, yeah, this is confirmed who this person is. And
interesting.
So there's some things that are out there to help people and parents actually avoid the predators. It's the predators that you're worried about, because pose as, you know, you'll have an older adult posing as a child to make contact with a child to do ill will to them.
Yeah, that's scary.
Then we get back to the dynamics of the family that child is looking for a way to matter. And so they're connecting with someone outside of their family.
Well, I think the other thing, too, though, is parents, because they're working, they're not as available in there as much as they should be, and they're not checking up on their kids the way they should be. And, you know, my teen years, I was a great kid until I hit 16, and then it was all downhill for several years. I mean, I really rebelled. But part of it is because I was allowed to. You know, my parents were both at work, and they didn't check. As long as my homework in the kitchen got cleaned, they didn't know what I was out doing. And I think that there is such a thing as too much freedom during those years.
One of the things that, you know, we talk about with our parents often is, as long as the kids don't cause us problems, we let them go on autopilot. And that's kind of a bad habit to get into. We need to be engaged with our children on a daily basis.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a difference between kids, too. Having raised two that were completely different, I remember my oldest, when he was about 21, calling me, and he said, how come I had to have a curfew but Donnie didn't? And I said very simply, because I knew every minute where Donnie was. Donnie would call me and say, I'm at Steven's house. Do you want to talk to Steven's mom? Sure, you know. Or I'm at Brandon's house. His mom is getting home from work in an hour or whatever. I always knew where Donnie was. Jeremy was the one that, you know, was kind of pushing the boundaries and getting in trouble or almost getting in trouble. Or, you know, I shared the internet story where he I think I shared the internet story where he got in trouble for curfew. And, you know, Ventura County at the time had, a 10 o'clock curfew.
10 o'clock curfew, yeah.
Moving the rocks.
Yeah. No, that was me. I had to move rocks. That was me as a rock pile.
Yeah, I was a teen in Ventura County. It was a 10 o'clock curfew.
Yeah.
That's a pretty standard curfew time. you know, my parents never even worried about curfew. I'd come home midnight. You know, it's amazing I never got in more trouble than I did. Actually,
I agree. It's amazing I didn't get in more trouble than I did. I mean, I had my share of groundings, but it's amazing I didn't get in more trouble than I did or really hurt somebody.
Get caught.
Or really hurt somebody, yeah.
The other thing that's largely different is the authority figures in our lives, the teachers, the doctors, the parents, the policemen, you know, what they said we just gave sanction to, that was the end all.
That's
that was
true.
Right. That was correct. We didn't have the advantage of Google, where we could Google any topic you can think about and get varying views and then develop your own belief structure off of that information. So today you have kids now that are have much more access to more information, and two is the authority figures in your life are not the absolute end-all, and they will say, well, what about this or what about that?
Yeah, and they'll question you.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, you talk about that, and when I was a child, we were told policemen were our friend. You know, if you were lost, if you needed help, you went to the police. That's where you went. That's who you called. And as young as when I was in my late teens, I worked in a daycare center. And one time a police car drove by where the children were playing, and one yelled, "It's the cops! Hide!" And half of the kids scattered. Now, that's just one small generation later. And I'm sure by now it's totally worse.
Are you guys regarded as the enemy? Are you a friend or foe to the teens?
most of these kids come to us, we're the foe. There's no doubt about it. Most of the contacts people have are negative.
Mm-hmm.
With law enforcement, that's the nature of the job. People don't call us when they're at their best.
Really?
They have a tendency to call us when things are at their worst. And anyway, so over a period of time, you know, we build a rapport, and the kids begin to realize that we're there to help them, take care of them. And we'll go to court and be as unbiased as we possibly can. We tell them that, you know, if you do good, we're going to tell the court you did good. And they end up, and a lot of our graduates will just keep coming back. They'll come back just to visit because they realize there's somebody who actually is honest, straightforward. You know, our policies, we don't lie about anything because, first of all, they can go Google it. So you're just going to undermine your own authority and your own integrity. So
I think you have to be pretty honest with kids, because if you're BSing them in any way, they're going to see right through you, and then you lose all credibility. And once you lose credibility, why should they listen to you? And I think too many parents think that they can BS their teens, and they wind up where they just won't believe them, listen to them, or care what you say anymore.
Well, it's like every relationship. I mean, imagine a spouse or a significant other. Once somebody said something that's not valid, excuse me, or not true, that trust in that relationship is now damaged.
Right, and very hard to rebuild, especially for teens.
And for anybody. I mean, yeah. Teens are they're developing their opinion, but yes.
Okay,
we're
going to
take a break. We'll be back in a little bit. Hi, this is Dr. Andrea Mills with Allied Chiropractic. Everybody knows that when you're in pain, a chiropractor is your go-to doctor for safe and effective results. But did you know that chiropractic patients are healthier than the average population? Studies show that patients who get regular chiropractic care spend less money on doctor's visits, prescription drugs, surgeries, and hospitalizations than the average population. Why is that? Well, it makes perfect sense to me. It'll make sense to you, too, if you tune in to my new show, It's a Paradox, with me and my co-host, Dr. Vicki Thomas, where we'll be blowing the lid on living the good life, teaching about how to make your body work better, and a bunch of other great stuff. So listen here on 1380 AM or www.newstalk1380.com. That's on Mondays at 11 a.m. And listen in to find out what you can do to make your body heal that painful condition without drugs, have stronger resistance to colds, flu, and disease, and perform at your very best. We'll talk to you then. Thanks.
If you're smoking and you're choking, call us now. If you're smoking and you're choking, call us now. If you're smoking and you're choking and you want to stop from croaking, if you're smoking and you're choking, call us now.
After my first session here, I walked out of here an ex-smoker. I never smoked after that.
It's been better than a year and a half. I have not had a single urge to smoke.
Hi, this is Dr. Vicki Thomas with Rev It Up Hypnosis, and I've been helping people stop smoking for over 12 years now. Thousands of people.
There were no withdrawal symptoms. None. Zero. I left here, had no desire to smoke.
It's just unbelievable. If you really want to quit smoking, this is the easiest way to quit smoking.
Revit Up Hypnosis, 661-209-2632. And even though results may vary, we offer a service guarantee and a free hypnosis screening.
If you're smoking and you're choking and you want to stop from croaking, if you're smoking and you're choking, call us now.
Mommy, now you don't have to die.
That's Revit Up Hypnosis, 661-209-2632.
Most people agree that network marketing is an excellent vehicle to achieving financial freedom. But if you are only retaining 6 to 7% of your people, you won't get very far. Hi, this is Debbie Callis. Seriously, I had a major headache from banging my head against the wall over how to help the people in my organization achieve the success that I was enjoying. Unfortunately, I, along with most network marketers, have been taught that we are in a sales and recruiting business. But with 90% of the population being sales resistant, how can the average person truly find success? The truth is, network marketing is a teaching and mentoring business, and you need a proven, duplicatable system that will work for the masses. My life and business turned around when I came across the free ebook, Success in 10 Steps, by Michael DeLohi. And now, I'd like to share this free ebook with you as well. Visit my website at my10steps.com. That's my, the number 10, steps.com. No products or companies are ever mentioned. It's just a straight scoop on the industry. So put that bottle of aspirin away and get started with some great information that will get you on your way to truly owning your life.
I want you to want me.
So this, to me, is a quintessential teenager song. When I was 13, my girlfriend Amy and I used to listen to it as we were playing with makeup.
And this morning you were playing with makeup, so
yes.
You feel good?
Yeah, absolutely. Although I wasn't listening to Cheap Trick.
Now you should. Now you know. In the morning you put that on when you do the makeup.
Exactly.
It'll make you feel like a teenager.
Exactly.
So we were talking about the input that kids get that come teens or kids come from outside of parental units anymore, come from outside of where we want it to come from. So you were saying, Mark, they get from computers, from games, from
all the avenues within the home, let alone the parents. And then you have the issues that are all going on the campuses, the school campuses. You know, today we have what we call school-based gangs. The old version of gangs was neighborhoods, and they grew up in the neighborhood, and they go to school. Well, here you have kids from different neighborhoods actually clicking up, if you would, inside the school campus and forming a gang.
Wow.
Once the bell rings at 3 o'clock and everyone goes home, that gang dissipates throughout, you know, they're by themselves. And there's a lot of dynamics that are happening within that whole antisocial gang movement.
It's kind of like the bullies kind of get together.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily call all gang kids bullies. I mean, there's a dynamic there. And if gang kids themselves did not do crime, if they did not create victims or victimize others, they wouldn't be seen as a negative. There's a lot of things that social group actually gives these kids.
I was going to say, isn't it true that when a kid joins a gang, it's usually because they're looking for some sort of a social family structure?
Well, they're looking for their needs to be met. If you go back to human needs, Maslow's basic hierarchy of needs, you break that down and you look at why these kids do what they're doing, it's right off of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Even to some point, some of these gangs provide food and clothing and a place to sleep.
Just real briefly, for those listeners who don't know, why don't you define that hierarchy, Maslow's hierarchy?
I think just Google it.
So if you're listening to the show and you don't know what it is, just go Google it.
Well, Dr. Maslow did some research and basically came up with the fact that, and it holds true today, all human beings, regardless of our ethnicity, our gender, our age, we all have the same basic human needs. And the ones on the bottom of a pyramid, for those who haven't seen it before, it's in a pyramid shape, and they're real basic: food, water, freedom of pain. And it moves on up through the pyramid, ultimately to the top of transcendency and self-actualization. Mm-hmm. Where a lot of us get hung up and the kids live in is this need to be loved and to love, and love and belongingness needs.
Mm-hmm.
They so desperately want to be loved. They want to matter.
Right.
And that's why I use that a lot is once we can start to communicate not only verbally but nonverbally in our behavior and actions that these kids matter, that their life matters, their dream matters, and we're going to do what we need to do to facilitate that. It's phenomenal. The response is absolutely phenomenal, and that's where the successes come in, and that's where the families that are doing well, where they do well in, is they've found a way to make their children feel like they matter.
Once a kid comes to you and starts getting these needs met and is into the program, how long before you start to see a turnaround?
You know, that's a case-by-case study. If we were to say generically, halfway point, week eight, you start seeing kids, you know, and we change our tactics too from you can't leave to we're going to kick you out. You know, we have kids come to our program that have, you know, the report card sounds like all F's, you know. Can I get a vowel for?
I got a chance to visit one of your group meetings, and it was with the parents.
Yes.
And I noticed that within the parents, that there were different levels of change going on within the parents. And, you know, certain parents were there because they had to be, or I don't know if they had to be, but maybe it's court ordered, or, but some parents you could tell were really digging on the change. You know, they were happy to see their kids, you know, and they'd say, we had a great week.
Yeah. Anytime you get a new skill set, new tool, and you learn how to use it, it's exciting because you start seeing growth. And a lot of the families, the reason we have them is because that child was involved in some kind of behavior that's not acceptable. And a lot of these parents are at their wits' end. Let's face it. We all have kids here. How many of you were given some kind of class or manual when you had your baby?
Never, yeah.
Yeah.
I had a one-hour class with a pediatrician.
Really?
I had to study more and go through more to get my driver's license.
How old were you when that happened? Or how old were the kids?
I was 16.
See, and that might be why they did it, because you were still a kid yourself.
No, everyone there that had a baby that
yeah,
day
I
was
actually,
there.
When my daughters were born, I was surprised at how easy it was to walk out of the hospital. I mean, I really thought, aren't they going to give me a test or something? You're not really going to send this little creature home with me, are you?
I remember when he got home calling one of my aunts and saying, I'm not really sure what to do now.
Exactly.
What do I do now?
Yeah.
Because
you know,
I wasn't in the hospital with him anymore.
It gets a little easier, but there are some days where I still wake up and I think, I don't really know what to do today.
There's been days for me, and I know for my wife, that, you know, we know what to do or what we should do, but we're just so exhausted.
Yeah.
You know, and trying to find that energy to invest and validate your child is almost impossible.
But you know what? It's the most important thing that you can do. And I think once you become a parent, you have to step outside yourself and say, it's no longer just about me. It's now about this creature that I am creating. And Vicky touched on this, I think, in one of the blog posts. You know, too many people have children and never begin with the end in mind, that they're actually raising an adult. But they have.
I always
you
think
have
that
to sort
you
of.
Yeah, I think I said that you have to raise them for today,
but with
keep
an eye
on
what you have to be doing with them.
Because, for example, you said you start with kids at 11 to 13, and your eye has to be on what they're going to be at 15, what they're going to be at 17.
Yeah.
Well, actually.
And that's a difficult age
them,
anyway, just because of the hormonal changes.
We ask them what they want to be. And
excellent.
That, you know,
yeah.
And so.
But as a parent. You just want them to be, and I think you said this at one point on the blog, you want them to be
She's
liked.
She's pointing to me.
Yeah, Andrea. that you want them to be liked and happy and, you know, living
doing
good
more good
life.
Than
you
bad.
Know,
yeah, exactly.
Do more good than bad.
Well,
yeah.
Successful doesn't necessarily always mean liked.
No.
Yeah, no, not at all.
You know, we can use the term productive citizen. But once again, everybody's going to define that a little different. Just like you read your definition of paradox, you know, we learn these concepts differently in a different pace. And so the results is going to be different because everyone's learning differently. And then they have a different pre-existing volume of already learned material. So all new learning is based on what we've learned in the past.
Right.
And so that's the hard thing is, you know, what do you know? What are your concepts? What are your belief structures where they're at right now? And then how are we going to move forward there?
So, Mark, let's talk a little bit about if you're a parent and you have a preteen or a teen that you think is starting to become an at-risk child, what are some things in the home that they could do to maybe help turn that tide just a little bit and change the course of their teens or preteens' life?
Obviously, consistency is probably the best thing to have. I mean, if you have two biological parents in the home or two parents in the home, they have to be on the same page.
Yeah.
You have to be consistent. And then within that consistency, I would actually put a lot on the kid. I would sit down and have your children in the home develop some kind of, whether you want to call it a contract or, you know, we teach a family government. One of the things that I did, and I have three teens in my home, and you, I think all you both know my children. One of the things that we did right up from the beginning when they were younger, obviously they had to be able to talk and engage, not mm-hmm. when they're one and three. But we sat down and said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have this little family government. Everyone has a say. We're going to have these meetings. The meetings, you can say anything without fear of any kind of repercussions, kind of like all oxen free. And I said, you're going to set up your own rules. And so I said, here's what Dad wants. I don't want anything broken in my home, and I don't want anybody to get hurt in my home.
Mm-hmm.
Under those two basic guidelines, you're going to come up with how you're going to make sure that doesn't happen. And so my three kids sat down, and they made up a rule, you know, rules. We won't do this and won't do that. And they came up with the exact same things, you know, my wife and I would have come up with. But now they're their rules.
They're much more invested when they come up
they're
with it, aren't they?
Much more invested.
Yeah.
And then the next thing I asked them to do is create a discipline schedule. So I said, so what happens now when somebody violates this rule? And so they actually wrote down, you know, different degrees of what they thought was fair and acceptable. So now when we enact some kind of discipline, and I use the word discipline opposed to punishment, we can come put a pin in that. I'll come back to that.
Mm-hmm.
They understand that. They understand that.
You know, I was raising my children in a different generation. They're 30 and 33. But we kind of did the same thing without that formal structure. And I remember when they were teens, when they did something incorrectly or, you know, got in trouble, I at some point I realized if I just asked them what they thought the punishment should be, it was always more than I would have done.
We have kitty court with mine. And mind you, I'm an only child, so I grew up without siblings. So the entire... I mean, that whole concept of family rules and, you know, sort of governing yourselves did not apply to me at all. It was like my parents laid down the rules and I was the child and I was expected to just go along with whatever it was. But we have kitty court in my home and our oldest isn't even seven yet. And it's interesting because the three kids, you know, something happens, we line them all up and the accused has to say what happened. The accuser has to say what happened, and then the neutral third party has to confirm or deny either story. And then the neutral third party comes up with a punishment, and it's hysterical.
So basically, it's kind of like a congressional setting where you have
kind
somebody lobbying.
Yeah, you've met my husband, you know.
they're very young to be doing that.
But they are, and they come up with consequences. And I'm always amazed, like Mark said, at 6 and 5, they come up with consequences that are harsher than I would come up with. I mean, one time, my oldest daughter, Samantha, was like, well, he should lose his blah, blah, blah for a week. And I'm thinking, whoa, don't put her in charge.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, and these are some just little things that we, you know, we can put in place. And if we don't think about it, we never do it.
Right.
I mean, you know, that would never happen in our home.
Right.
And
see, now you guys said you have the family court and you have kitty court, and we had the pig award, which was just a little pig that followed you around. And if you were not, I mean, it wasn't alive, it was a ceramic pig. And if somebody was like a pig, they got the award. And
that's funny.
Anybody could give it to anybody in the family.
Now I'm going to correct you. I didn't say family court.
Oh, sorry.
Family meeting.
Family meeting.
And the reason is because the family meeting is about problem solving. The court has a stigma that there's going to be punitive or some kind of adjudication, and that's not necessarily what I want to communicate in that particular
meeting. Neither was the pig award. It was a way to make fun of somebody laughing.
All right, so we will be back in just a few minutes with Sergeant Mark Kripe of the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department.
If you're smoking and you're choking, call us now. If you're smoking and you're choking, call us now. If you're smoking and you're choking and you want to stop from croaking, if you're smoking and you're choking, call us now.
After my first session here, I walked out of here an ex-smoker. I never smoked after that.
It's been better than a year and a half. I have not had a single urge to smoke.
Hi, this is Dr. Vicki Thomas with Rev It Up Hypnosis, and I've been helping people stop smoking for over 12 years now. Thousands of people.
There were no withdrawal symptoms. None. Zero. I left here, had no desire to smoke.
It's just unbelievable. If you really want to quit smoking, this is the easiest way to quit smoking.
Rev It Up Hypnosis, 661-209-2632. And even though results may vary, we offer a service guarantee and a free hypnosis screening.
If you're smoking and you're choking and you want to stop from croaking, if you're smoking and you're choking, call us now.
Mommy, now you don't have to die.
That's Rev It Up Hypnosis, 661-209-2632.
Hi, this is Dr. Andrea Mills with Allied Chiropractic. Everybody knows that when you're in pain, a chiropractor is your go-to doctor for safe and effective results. But did you know that chiropractic patients are healthier than the average population? Studies show that patients who get regular chiropractic care spend less money on doctor's visits, prescription drugs, surgeries, and hospitalizations than the average population. Why is that? Well, it makes perfect sense to me. It'll make sense to you, too, if you tune in to my new show, It's a Paradox, with me and my co-host, Dr. Vicki Thomas, where we'll be blowing the lid on living the good life, teaching about how to make your body work better, and a bunch of other great stuff. So listen here on 1380 AM or www.newstalk1380.com. That's on Mondays at 11 a.m. And listen in to find out what you can do to make your body heal that painful condition without drugs, have stronger resistance to colds, flu, and disease, and perform at your very best. We'll talk to you then. Thanks.
Close your eyes in Chicago, and you can hear the sound of zebra braying in Africa. Look hard out your window in D.C., and you can see the snow-covered peaks of the Andes. Stand on a corner in L.A. and feel the hot wind of the Sahara brush across your face. The world is that small. We are that connected. Please visit earthshare.org and learn how the world's leading environmental groups are working together, making it so simple for you to make a difference. Because we are many, and we are one. Please visit us at earthshare.org to learn more. Earthshare. One environment. One simple way to care for it all. A public service message from Earthshare and the Ad Council.
I want you to want me.
Okay.
We're back. And before I forget, we do have a number if someone would like to call in and ask questions. 661-266-4420.
Man, that's the first show we haven't said it until like 40 minutes in.
I know.
Scary.
Oh, well. So, Sergeant Kripe, what is the best way for a family to really validate their kids, make them feel like they matter? How do they do that? Let's flip it to that.
Well, I won't differentiate between best way, because obviously each family is going to have to find their best way.
Of course.
It'd be unfair for me to say, oh, well, that's best and this is best. But one is understand this process of making a child matter, validating their behavior. A lot of times we can do the exact same behavior and have completely different results depending on how we facilitated it as the adult, how we set it up, how we actually executed this whole thing. So one is it's important for the parent to realize that there's a lot of things we ask the child to do, and we might in our mind say, well, that's because the kid matters. Well, what you're asking them to do is things that matter to you, not necessarily making the kid feel or the child feel like they matter.
And I'm going to say this could be applied to every relationship, not just child.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. In fact, all this stuff that we talk about, Maslow's hierarchy needs, there's another thing that the listeners should or could Google is the Franklin reality model and needs, beliefs, behaviors. And that's where we're getting into this concept of you have a human need, you develop a belief, this is how I'm going to meet that need, and then that obviously
determines your behavior.
Yeah.
So how does a parent facilitate, for example, a child doing chores that really the parent, it matters to the parent, but it doesn't matter to the child. How does the parent really facilitate that in such a way that the child feels like they matter?
Well, the first thing is obviously sitting down and having a communication, having a relationship with your child, and knowing and asking them questions and knowing what is important to them. And then on a reciprocal basis, letting them know what is important to you. And that we're not perfect. We make mistakes or whatever. And so you have this relationship. And
I don't know about that. Aren't you perfect?
Oh, no.
I'm kidding.
Yeah. My wife will be calling in any minute now. She'll validate that, I'm sure.
Today, for this hour, we'll assume that you are.
Anyway, so the things that we do, we have these kids do. It's about, one is you want them to have some, build their self-worth, self-esteem. But they go away feeling like they're a contributing factor to the family unit and that they're needed, and then that that family unit honors, respects their voice. Once a child feels like they are not being respected, they're not their voice is not heard, they're going to start to resist or move away. And that's exactly, I mean, and that's a balance that I've had to work on keeping in my own home.
Ernie, do we have a phone call?
No, he's just trying to get out of the way.
Oh, there is a phone call. I see the light flashing. Perhaps we should take a phone call.
Hi, it's Dr. Mills and Dr. Vicky. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, who's this?
My name is Mark.
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
It's another Mark.
I'm sorry?
It's another Mark.
Yes. Yeah, and no hair lip jokes, okay?
Do you have a question?
Yes, I have a question for Sergeant Kripe.
Sure.
I hear you talking a lot about, you know, developmental standards in a household with parenting and so forth, apparently for younger kids. What do you recommend for kids that are a bit older that are facing perhaps, you know, going out on their own and the fear that they seem to have, and actually fear for even younger kids who are acting out in angry manners as a result of that?
That's a good question.
That's an outstanding question. In fact, that is an area that I'm currently dealing with at home on my own. With my oldest daughter, and that tends to be, or it seems to be, something in this generation that's much more prevalent than we may think it is. And right now, I'm using patience with a little bit of nudging, and trying to understand myself why my child and her generation have so much
angst.
They're so worried about what's out there, the future, and I think that might be a result from so much information. And information.
Well, yeah, there's so much information, and if you watch the news, it's all doom and gloom, and you know we've been mired down in the Middle East now. The economy is not doing so well, and these are the messages that are hitting their brains.
I'm also seeing,
it's almost like this victim mentality that they're getting from the media.
I'm also seeing a really big misbelief that whatever they step out and do at the age of 19, they have to do for the rest of their life, or this is their career choice, or that this is the only thing they can do, like they're stuck there forever.
Well, you can see it in the driver's license. I mean, I bought my daughter a car, got insurance for her, we did everything that most teens would just absolutely love, at least I thought. She will not go get a driver's license. She doesn't want to drive. She doesn't. You give her an opportunity. If you want to drive, you know, you can drive home or drive here. And
see,
absolutely not.
I think this is where growing up without a TV gives me a little bit of perspective. And my advice to many families is, you really have to watch those messages coming in from the media, because media messages are always negative. And if your teen is getting those from the news or television shows or whatever, that's going to form their belief structure. And I think it's very important to limit those and to give them beliefs that are positive and empowering, and you can do this, because there's just too much out there.
To go back to, is Mark still with us?
Maybe.
Mark, are you still on the phone?
Post 9/11 with the PTSD issue.
No, he's gone. Sorry about that.
Well, and if it really is a fear, a limiting belief or a fear, which are two different things, but either one I can work with in my office.
Back to what he was saying, I think the children need to have something that helps them it validates themselves to themselves. In other words, it's almost like the a coming of age, rite of passage type thing. Can I rise to the moment that I think may come? Even though some of these moments are some of the things that they're afraid of, might not ever come, but what they've seen in and around them, whether it's traffic accidents or robberies or whatever, or on a bigger global scale, that happens, the war in Iraq, and like what I heard there the last minute was the whole 9/11 thing.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to be able to rise up to that occasion? And so one of the things I've done is basically I give my daughter complex tasks to try to problem solve, and then try to encourage her and then affirm her when she gets through it. Or, okay, this doesn't matter, and she'll get upset because it's not exactly perfect. You know, I tell her, well, life's not really perfect.
Life's not about being perfect.
Right, but we all pursue it. I mean, we want to look perfect. We want to, you know, I mean.
And so I think that's part of the fear of these. You know, he's talking about the transition from teen to adulthood and moving out of home and doing the things that teens should do. Part of the fear is if they have this idea that they have to have arrived. They have to be the psychologist. They have to be the whatever successful thing that they want to be at 19. And they're missing the part that we all work to get where we're at. You know, and all those successful people worked to get where they're at. They didn't step out at 19 and become.
Right.
Well, impulsivity or gratification delay is not their strong point, not this generation's strong point. The ability to, they think it, they're going to do it.
Yeah, and I talked about this on the blog the other day, just from a neurological standpoint. Their brains, the myelin sheath that allows the neurons to talk quickly between the I want to do it part of the brain and there might be a consequence part of the brain, isn't fully developed until 25 or so. And so just from a neurological standpoint, those messages don't travel as fast. And it's maddening to parents because we're looking at it from the standpoint of, why don't you know? That's not a good idea. And just the messages don't get from the frontal lobe to the pleasure center of the brain the way they should.
Well, now I'm not saying
or the way they will.
I'm like, you should act. I mean, it's, you know, do it. And they're actually responding slower than the adults, where in the past it used to be quicker. You know, we used to just, you know, think and do it. They want to do it. They want to have certain impulse. We call it impulse control, but they want to have that instant gratification because everything around them is about instant. I mean, instant cue on your Netflix. You Google something. I mean, how fast are computers going?
Oh, yeah, it's crazy.
You know, for them to have a dial-up
and have
a load.
So if only their brains worked as fast as their thumbs.
Yeah, exactly.
It'd be good.
So, you know, giving kids this opportunity to go out and struggle, fall down and pick them up. And you know, one of the things I've said before, there comes a time where we have to be able to facilitate an event or a situation and let our children fail.
Yeah.
And let them realize that failing isn't necessarily this doomsday scenario that they might think it is.
You know, failing is just one more step in the process of getting to where you want to go.
Yeah, well, we've been there. We all understand that. We've kind of lived some of our life.
But to the kids, it's the end of the world.
Yeah.
I have one of my favorite books that I have my kids read. It's called Fail Better, Fail Bigger. And it's a real small book, but it's about all these people in American culture, for the most part, who were considered failures until they finally got it right.
Mm-hmm.
None the least is Thomas Edison.
Right.
You know, 10,000 different filaments that didn't work, and he came up with a light bulb.
Was it Warren Buffett who didn't get accepted to the school of his choice or whatever, and he thought it was the end of the world? I don't know. There was a big article. I don't remember which magazine, but they had Warren Buffett in there and, you know, Jobs from Apple and a whole bunch of different people. And none of those successful people, if you look at their teenage years, really would you have ever guessed that they'd be where they are now.
Well, and even if you think of the biggies like Microsoft, there were errors in Microsoft. You know, they failed.
Still are.
Yeah. There are a few things going on there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Bill Gates didn't have it all like perfect either.
Yeah.
But we get in, and the adults are real guilty of this. You know, I mean, we really stress that the perfect marketing campaign or the perfect clothes, the perfect makeup or whatever it is. We really, really push to have perfect this, and it's got to be blemish-free and blah, blah, blah. And that's not real life.
Yeah.
Let's face it, it's not. I mean, real life is ugly. It's sweaty. It's dirty. And that's the way it is.
Yeah.
I'd like to maybe talk a little bit about just some family traditions that could help you keep your kids from becoming at risk, or you know, make sure that you're connected to them and know what's going on in their lives, so that you know, there's that awareness.
Well, I know earlier we talked about a family dinner, and
yeah,
and there are certain points in time where that just doesn't work because you have kids on the run, kids
right.
in sports. I mean, you really want your kids to be in organized sports because that does keep them from hanging out on the corners. And so there are many things in life that keep our kids and there's no place for them to play. We talked about that, too. They can't just get their exercise in the yard.
Well, yeah. Another dynamic of – and I'm just going to disclose a little bit of my own story – one of the reasons I was not big into family dinners is because as a child, am I saying, you know, all adults are grown up injured children. As a child, I have vivid memories of watching my parents violently interact. I've seen my brother knocked off his chair at the table onto the floor.
And, yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, and so my belief, if you would, about sitting down as a family and having dinner is built around a lot of negative experiences. So why would I recreate that in my family?
Right. See, and we have dinner together as a family every night, and we have breakfast together, the kids and I and my sister-in-law, most mornings. And it's nice to spend that time to anchor them to their day and to debrief their day with them. But it's not like you experienced at all. It's a very loving, you know, the kids set the table and the kids help with dinner and
yeah,
it's a very family-oriented
thing. We did the family
thing.
Dinner, and we even did the conversation. When they got old enough to have good conversation, it was, what was the best part of your day today?
Exactly. What
Tell
was the best part
was
of your day
best
today?
Thing that happened today?
What was the greatest thing that happened to you today? We do that, too.
And that's great. It keeps the mind focused on the positive affirmation. This is what went well. This is what went, you know, this is what we did good. And that's outstanding. There's a lot of different traditions. I've heard of some very unique things out there that people do to build that cohesive family and to promote conversation, promote that reciprocal learning between the parent and the child. You know, the child needs to learn about us and that our story
mm-hmm.
as well as whatnot, because they're going to have this image that they're going to create. If we don't tell them or fill in these blanks, they're just going to create it.
Yeah, they'll make up whatever suits them based on your behavior if they don't know your own story. I agree. And there have been times when I've gotten very upset with my children and I've lost it and I've yelled and screamed or whatever. And when I finally get calmed down, I say, you know, I overreacted and I'm sorry. But here's what I was thinking and feeling at the time, and maybe I could have done it this way.
Okay, so all that being said, do you tell your teen the things you got in trouble with?
I'm struggling with that because if I tell my kids what I did, man, it's going to be an issue.
Well, I was pregnant at 16, so there, you know, having Jeremy was the obvious.
Yeah, I'm actually,
you know,
I'm struggling
hello?
With that now, trying to determine how much do I disclose because I was a wild child.
What if you frame it with, well, here's what I learned.
Yeah.
I learned if you have a baby at 16, you face this and this and this, and this is the hard parts. I also learned if you have a baby older in life, this seems to be simpler, or blah, 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 blah. How we frame our story, I think, is as important as the story.
But what if
mine became literally a moral and ethical learning for my children? When my youngest son was in high school and there was a debate in a class over if you were in college, got your girlfriend pregnant, or were the girlfriend that got pregnant, would you have an abortion? And my son was the only one that stood up in class and said no. Everyone else said absolutely, it would ruin their life, it would stop their college, whatever, whatever. And he said, if my mom had made that decision, I would not have my brother. And the class came to a dead standstill, and he even later had to argue with the teacher.
Wow.
So it became a moral and ethical learning for them that they absorbed in exactly the way I would like them to.
What scares me about my kids growing up in this day and age is, you know, when I was growing up, I mean, yeah, of course there were drugs. Pot, cocaine were the biggest. But ecstasy didn't exist yet. And the drugs now are so much stronger, either cut with things that could really, really do some damage. I mean, it just seems like they're scarier than when we were kids. And what's your experience on the streets with that?
Well, I don't have a whole lot of narcotics experience, but what I do have from working with the families and the kids that come to us on some kind of substance,
There is a lot more out there. I mean, it's potent. I mean, the THC count in marijuana is much higher than it was.
Exactly, than it was when we were kids.
You know, you have stress, chronic, some new stuff out there called White Widow, allegedly. Methamphetamine is phenomenally addictive. And two is, you know,
and
Ritalin.
Damaging.
Ritalin. They're selling, you know, the Ritalin pills, you know, $5 a pill on the campuses. Adderall or Dexedrine. There's a bunch of stuff that's out there that are prescription drugs that these kids are getting and they're not taking.
And they're taking them recreationally.
Well, they're selling them. They're taking recreationally. And so, once again, what would you target your lesson to be? Here's the results. You know, we use there's another website called drugfreeworld.org, and their whole campaign is just find out the truth about drugs. They're not trying to pitch anything. They just say, this is the truth. This drug does this, it affects this, and this is the results. You know, this generation, and my wife and I had a conversation recently, and I believe this generation that we're working with right now, they really, really honestly are seeking truth. They're looking for what's real. There's so much propaganda. There's so much spin on everything. They're tired of adults, you know, painting this one this way or this way. Who do you trust? And so they're really looking for someone to be, you know, truthful and honest. And the more truthful and honest you are, if you don't know, you don't know.
Yeah.
And I think that they respond well to that.
We need to start wrapping it up. We're a couple minutes away. So what I want to do is I want to give you guys the website. And if you have questions for Sergeant Cripe or you have something that you want us to talk about a little bit in further detail, go to www.thetwodocs.com. That's thetwodocs.com. It's the number two docs.com. And post a comment and we can forward that to Sergeant Cripe and get his input on it. What was that website you just gave? Truthaboutdrugs.org?
Drugfreeworld.org.
Drugfreeworld.org. So we'll get some of these resources on the site under the resources tab for you to look at
and links and stuff to it.
When
we're off there, we'll get any other resources that Sergeant Cripe has for us that we could share with our listeners.
We have several different resources that people have. Teens that they're struggling with, you know, we can try to help them get them help.
Yeah, so we'll get a list of that stuff from Sergeant Cripe, and we'll get it posted on the website so that you can find it. You know, we didn't even get into the medications they're putting on our kids these days. That's probably a whole other show.
Or the nutrition that they need.
The nutrition that they need.
Yeah,
we miss that.
The nutrition will actually help offset the need for some of the medication.
Absolutely. You know, I really believe 80%, and this is my own personal belief. I'm not referencing any science or anything. I'm just saying 80%, my belief, ADHD and ADD kids is really nutritional issues, and they're just completely misdiagnosed. I mean, Fruit Loops is not a food.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Don't get me on the ADD, ADHD.
Yeah, don't get me started on it.
Because I'm one of those people that, even though you can show me brain scans that say it exists, it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
There's my bandstand. I can get it going, and I can argue it.
And I would encourage parents, if you can get into a parenting class, whoever's teaching it, whether it's law enforcement-based or faith-based or just community-based, if you can get into any parenting program. I know Palmdale has the Parent Project, which is outstanding. But get in there and learn some skills, learn some techniques, and learn some different things.
I guess
that's our sign
we have to go.
Well, Mark, thank you for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next week at 11 a.m. on It's a Paradox.
That's it.
Thank you.
The following was a sponsored program. HIDESA Broadcasting is not responsible for the views or claims expressed in the previous program.
Serving the Antelope Valley for over 50 years. This is News Talk 1380, KOSS Lancaster, a High Desert Broadcasting Company station.